Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. Come along and join me for a visit with Dennis Brown, Assistant Vice President for News and Media Relations. And then we'll visit with Gina Costa, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Notre Dame's Snite Museum of Art, commonly ranked as one of America's top 10 university art museums.
Hi, I'm Dennis Brown. I'm the Assistant Vice President for News and Media Relations and University Spokesman at Notre Dame. We're here in the Morris Inn Campus Hotel, right on the campus of the university.
You've been here long enough to fall in love with the place, or you wouldn't still be here.
Yeah, I've been here for 31 years, and as you said, it's been a place that has really been a rewarding experience for myself and for my family. I really love the South Bend area and have enjoyed raising a family here. And the university is it's just one of the really distinctive places in America and in higher education, and really enjoyed every moment of it.
The name Notre Dame, Fighting Irish, it's like mythological, you know, it's a lot bigger than the reality in some ways. For example, you asked me how many students are here, and I thought, oh, 20,000, and you said?
Actually, our undergraduate student population is usually right around 8,600, 8,700. We're a little higher right now, but post-COVID, yeah, it has a massive national reputation for both academic excellence as well as the athletic traditions. And yet, it's a small community in relative terms, and that's one of the reasons why our alumni are so loyal to the place.
Let's talk football for a moment. Can't help that. That's so cool.
Yeah, the Notre Dame football tradition started more than 100 years ago, but really came to the fore in 1912 when Newt Rockne was a student and a wide receiver on the football team, and he and our quarterback, they didn't invent the forward pass, but they revolutionized it and made it popular in a very historic game at Yankee Stadium against Army. And then Rockne went on to become the coach in 1918 and won multiple national championships in the 1920s and really put the university on the map. But over time, the academic excellence caught up to the athletic tradition, and it's really one of the great combinations in higher education today.
What are some of the more outstanding majors that people seek out going to Notre Dame because?
Yeah, not surprisingly, our theology and philosophy departments are very strong, but so too is economics, as well as our Mendoza College of Business for undergrads is always ranked among the top five in the country. History, people would be surprised that we do cancer research here. We don't have a medical school. We don't have a health sciences center, but do quite a bit of cancer research. And astrophysics and nanotechnology are also very strong.
And that was the radiology building that I went by? Was that connected?
That's the radiation laboratory, and that does a wide variety of things under a federal government grant, but it's not necessarily connected to the astrophysics.
So pre-med, where do they go on to go to med school typically, or is there a typical?
We do have a very strong pre-med program. About 75% of our students are accepted to medical school, which is well above the national average. And so this is a good place to get your start and then move on to one of the great medical schools in the country.
Talk to us about back to football and the stadium, and there's some anomalies there that one would not expect.
Yeah, it was built in 1930. Rockne had so much success in the 20s that he was able to convince the university to build a stadium as opposed to basically it was a field that they played on where the library is now. And it was modeled on the University of Michigan, the Collegiate Bowl, smaller, and seated about 60,000. Rockne only coached in it for 1 year. He was killed in a plane crash in March of 1931.
So where was he going?
He was on his way to Hollywood.
Oh, wow.
He was an entrepreneur, great motivational speaker, and he was going to be doing some commercials out there and possibly a film. The plane crashed near Bazaar, Kansas, with 8 people on board, I believe. It was a national tragedy, actually. The funeral was on national radio. The president issued a statement. Rockne was one of the really massive figures of the time. But then the stadium was expanded in 1994. Seven was the first year that we played in it and expanded, and then we added some elements to it about 5 years ago. We attached buildings to it for student life, for classrooms, for laboratories, for music. So now it's a place where it's used hundreds and hundreds of times a year instead of 8 to 10 times a year.
And there's some anomalies there. You won't see big billboard advertisements. How did that not happen?
Yeah, we have no advertising in any of our athletic arenas. Unlike virtually every other college and professional organization, athletics organization, our feeling is that we want as clean a collegiate environment as we can without the commercialization. So we don't have luxury boxes per se, and we don't have advertising either in signage or on the video board.
A lot of people ask me, are all the students Catholic?
Yeah, about 80%, 80 to 85%, it fluctuates a little bit, of our students are Catholic. And then we have probably about 12 to 15% are Protestant. But we have Jewish students, Muslim students, and we have students of no faith. All are welcome here. There's absolute academic freedom for faculty and students to pursue areas of inquiry that are of interest to them. And so very much like any other university in the country, we do have a faith component to it, though, and it's very strong, and it's unusual. Many of the great universities in the country, many of our peers began with a religious affiliation, but that fell by the wayside. Notre Dame has maintained its Catholic identity throughout.
An aside, there's a historic connection with the Green Bay Packers and Notre Dame.
Yeah, actually, Curly Lambeau was a student at Notre Dame, a football player, and he went on to be a part of the Green Bay Packer organization, and of course the Packers' home stadium is named Lambeau Field, and we'll be playing in Lambeau Field in a couple of years against Wisconsin.
That's really cool. The capacity of your stadium is?
It's fluctuated. It's gone from about 60,000 up to about 81,000, and now it's at about 78,000, including the premium seats that we have, and it for many years sold out. I think for about 50 years in a row we sold out. We lost that streak a couple of years ago, and then obviously during COVID it went by the wayside, but it's pretty well packed every week. Every weekend in the fall with fans from all across the country. We're very much a national university with students from all 50 states and over 100 countries worldwide.
All said and done, is there one, unfair question, is there one outstanding element that you're most proud of at Notre Dame here?
Well, I think for me personally, if that's the question, it was the opportunity to work with Father Theodore Hesburgh, who was Notre Dame's president from 1952 to 1987, 35-year tenure, one of the great leaders in higher education in the Catholic Church, but also nationally and internationally. He was a charter member of the Civil Rights Commission, played an active and prominent role in the writing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and just an incredible human being who passed away about 5 or 6 years ago at age 97, but a real honor to have worked with him. And just to work at Notre Dame and see the Golden Dome every day walking into work, it's pretty special.
And the graduates of Notre Dame are called what?
Graduates of Notre Dame are called Domers. The Golden Dome is arguably the most famous collegiate landmark in the world. People see it on Saturday afternoons from the blimp over Notre Dame Stadium. It shines brightly, and we really enjoy having the opportunity to work underneath it.
I got a little box of chocolates as a gift from the university yesterday, and they're shaped in little domes.
Right. The South Bend Chocolate Company, which is a great business here in town, has created a Notre Dame series, and the domers are a part of that.
Before we go, I understand that you were here when they filmed the movie Rudy, and you knew Rudy?
Rudy was filmed in 1992 here on campus. Dan Rudiger, Rudy, persevered and finally made his way into Notre Dame. He transferred from Holy Cross College, a junior college across the street. And
describe a little deeper on the anomaly of Rudy being so small.
Rudy was not a big guy. He was very short and stocky, and would not be your prototypical Notre Dame football player. Anybody who's seen the movie has seen the differences, and they're real. Sean Astin played Rudy, and he was quite small compared to the other actors in the movie, and Rudy was the same way in real life. But he persevered, he played in his last, the only game he ever appeared in, he sacked the quarterback and was carried off the field, and he somehow got his life story made into a movie. His perseverance to make the football team is only outshone by his perseverance to get a movie made about his life.
And then he's an inspirational speaker today, right?
Yeah, he does a lot of motivational speaking around the country. I know that even still now, 30 years later, high school teams, even some college teams will watch the movie before a big tournament or a big game, and it is a great story of perseverance, of never giving up.
It really is. It can bring tears to your eyes.
Yes, it definitely can. And Rudy, you got to give him a lot of credit for pushing through on that.
Only because we have to take off, leave town now. I'm going to say goodbye. But before we go, if somebody wants to learn more about Notre Dame, where would you direct them?
Our website is nd.edu, and we have feature stories, news stories, and anything you need to know about applying to the university as a student. And we have social media accounts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the legendary University Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. We'll see you here.
Hello, I'm Gina Costa, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the Snipe Museum of Art on the University of Notre Dame campus. The Snipe Museum has been on the campus since 1980, though the University of Notre Dame has had an art collection since the late 19th century.
Talk to us a moment about where we are right now.
Right now, we're in the 16th century gallery of the Snipe Museum of Art, and we are excited because soon we'll be transitioning to the new Racklin Murphy Museum of Art, which will be opening November of 2023.
What happens to this space?
This space will become an art and education research center, and so it will be called the Snipe Art and Education Center. In the meantime, our collection of 30,000 plus objects will be moved down to the new Racklin Murphy Museum of Art, which sits on 8 acres of a sculpture park, the Charles B. Hayes Family Sculpture Park.
This museum, let me interject for a moment, you mentioned earlier, this is one of the premier art galleries, art venues of any university in America.
Correct. The Snipe Museum of Art is in the top university art museums in the country. We're often ranked 9th or 10th, depending who's doing the ranking. But we have over 30,000 objects, as I just mentioned, and we span from antiquity to present day, with an emphasis on premier collections in Mesoamerican, prints and drawings, African, decorative arts, our 18th and 19th century French and Italian drawings. Our photography collection has 11,000 works, and they are phenomenal, from present day to reaching back to the beginning of photography.
Your acquisition of your permanent exhibits, I assume, just guessing, that graduates alumni would be a source, right?
The alumni are a source. Many benefactors and donors have been very generous to us. The university does give us some funds to acquire some works. So our acquisitions are made up of a variety of sources, mm-hmm. and we try to narrow the gaps.
This is a tough question.
Yes.
A favorite.
A favorite?
Yeah, something a must-do. If I had 10 minutes here.
What you would see, I would point you to the Claude Lorrain in the 17th century gallery, a beautiful landscape, the rest of the flight of Egypt. I would also point you to the Grace Hartigan in the 20th century gallery, a phenomenal work by one of the premier women artists of the 20th century. Arwan Miro, also an important work. In the 18th century gallery, Elizabeth Vigie Lebrun's portrait of a milkmaid woman, and then also the Boucher Romance of Love are some of my favorites, and I think you must see works. And these are works by some of the most important artists of Western civilization.
And then another eye-stopping is your sculptures that you have.
Oh, our sculptures. We have a phenomenal collection of sculptures, both inside and outside. We have a courtyard full of sculptures, and then we have, as I said before, the Charles B. Hayes Family Sculpture Park, which is 8 acres, and families with strollers and dogs and runners and picnickers enjoy the beautiful weather out in the sculpture park. And that is also the location of the new art museum, which will be on the western edge of the park.
How do you draw in visitors, non-students, to come and experience?
Oh, we have an exciting schedule of family programs, of activities, lectures. We do yoga, we do family days. We have a fairly robust and rigorous schedule of programming.
And you do multidisciplinary things where you'll have music here.
We'll have music in the summer. We are, in fact, next week, jazz in the courtyard. So in the evenings, jazz outside. We have musicians who come from Chicago on Thursday evenings. So we have wine and cheese, music in the courtyard. It's hugely popular. We get hundreds of people mm-hmm. for that.
I know I was at the University of Michigan at their art mm-hmm. museum.
Fantastic museum.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But they do a cool program where they engage with senior citizens, with dementia people and whatnot.
We do the exact same thing.
Talk to us about that. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, we reach all of our communities with specific targeted programming because the arts are for everybody.
What they found at University of Michigan is that it elicits brain function amongst Alzheimer's people. Yeah.
In fact, there are lots of scientific studies that works of art can help with variety of communities of people who have learning disabilities, with memory loss, with all sorts of things. We also teach med students how to look, because by looking carefully and thinking about what you're looking at, you actually can help in your diagnosis. And there's scientific studies for that. And in fact, next month, I'm teaching classes for medical students on how to look and listen, because that is so important in a medical care of your patient.
Diagnostic.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah, isn't it great?
Yeah. Do you ever observe some epiphanous moments among the med students?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you see them, like their eyes, like, oh, I never thought of that. And that is, you know, very helpful. And I want to be the patient of that doctor.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about another favorite that you're most proud of here.
Oh, I think that our photography collection, I have to say, our photography collection is remarkable. And their works by especially Mexican women photographers of the 20th century. And those photographs are just very, very special. Additionally, we have the whole suite of Rembrandt etchings. There are 67 in this suite. Wow. And these are a lot of our visitor favorites.
I bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, Gina, to learn more about your world here?
Find us at our website, sniteartmuseum.nd.edu, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. And look for the new racklandmurphymuseum.nd.edu. That website will go live June 1st of 23. Contact me at the Snite Museum. I'm Gina Costa, and I'm the Director of Marketing and Public Relations.
Gina, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you very much. It was a delight talking with
you. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Notre Dame University in South Bend, Indiana. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Why don't you go where Harlem sits? Port and other ribs. Spangled gowns upon a bevy of high brown from down the levee, all misfits putting on the ribs. Why, that's where each and every Lulu Bell goes every Thursday evening with her swell bow rubbing elbows. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the ribs.